Welcome to the Board Gamers Anonymous Podcast, Episode 2, August 30th. Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, a podcast about gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This week, we're looking at Crossmaster Arena, the recently released miniature combat game from Japanime Games. We're also talking about Chronicle, the first game from Love Letter creator Seiji Kanai, as well as Dixit and others. Plus, Chris wins big at the Ticket to Ride tournament. This is Anthony.
Hi, I'm Chris.
This is Kim.
And this is Dan.
All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is our second episode, so obviously we were not completely turned off by the first one, and hopefully you were not either. We're going to start off this week, as I mentioned in the introduction, Chris won a tournament this weekend at the Great Ticket to Ride. I'm sure you've all played.
Yes, at our local and fun and friendly game store, Mirror Games, on Staten Island, New York. We do a monthly tournament. This month's game was Ticket to Ride. And unlike the past three tournaments, which were Love Letter, King of Tokyo, and Dixit, I don't own Ticket to Ride. I've barely played Ticket to Ride. So that gave me the competitive edge.
That does seem to be how it works. I've done very well in these tournaments, and I don't own any of the games. So
we all really are angry at Anthony.
Yeah. The last one, Dixit, I had not actually played before.
He won first place.
Yeah.
On the Dixit game. I kind of own Dixit and all its expansions, which did not help at all. But if you ever play Dixit, you understand why that doesn't help at all.
No.
So it's kind of like he was a Karate Kid of Dixit.
Yeah. What I'm saying. You got crane kicked.
That's right. I should have noticed that during the game when he stood on the table with his leg up in the air. Hey, what's going on, man?
I have a secret. Yeah. So not the humble brag, but this last week, Chris, he did tick the crown on Ticket to Ride. And if you're wondering how a Ticket to Ride tournament goes, it was just three games, because that game can go long, and that would not have worked.
Sure. So. And we always have a, chaotic, neutral picking the rules out and the scoring options. So you never know when you go into a tournament exactly what's going to let you win or lose. So we actually did something pretty novel. It was, if you won the game, you got to go on to the next round.
Yeah.
Previous games were kind of picked out of a hat, how you won or lost.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of them were. I don't remember what King of Tokyo was, but I know Dixit was. That was a random scoring.
Yeah, that was.
And it benefited me greatly, but it hurt some people greatly. So.
Yeah, I won two out of the three games for Dixit and didn't make it to the final round. I got second in the third round. I'm like, oh, I'm in the finals. No, not so much.
Yeah. I mean, if you've played Dixit, you know that, once someone finishes, everybody finishes until they've had their last turn. So technically, you can get more than 30 points, and that is how people reach the finals. It's racking up like 40 points, I think.
Which I don't know, and I guess our listeners will correct us. I don't know if that's actually the way the game ends. I think whoever hits 30 first, just that's how the game ends.
Yeah, there was some conversation before the tournament about which way it was supposed to go. It worked to my benefit, so I'm not complaining.
No, you won it, and that was great. And I think best of all, our friend Earl, who did not want to play at all at Dixit and wanted to play Agricola quite badly, was dragged into the tournament and ended up having to play the final game. So we all got to laugh as he was struggling, suffering through Dixit. And what did he come in? Second, third place?
Second. Yeah.
Second place. So, then we got to bother him about winning the prize. So
yeah.
Good times were had everywhere.
Yeah. It's like, I hate this game. Then stop winning. Yeah. So, tournaments, fun times. If you're on Staten Island, we have these once a month. And when we know when the next one is, we will tell you.
Yeah, usually they're at the last Sunday of the month. They're open to everybody, so feel free to drop down. We'll definitely teach you how to play the games. I think we're looking at Seven Wonders for the next tournament.
Yeah, that should be fun. It's a $5 entry fee. So.
Yeah, and Seven Wonders is a good game, so we'll get a lot of people to play, hopefully.
Yeah, Seven Wonders is one of my favorites, because I have no idea what I'm doing in that game, and the last three games I played, I came in either first or second place. So I feel like that newbie beginner luck is the way to go. I don't plan out on trying to get any type of victory. I'm just like, oh, this thing looks good. Let me get these resources. Let me build up this army. Next thing I know, at the end of the game, I have 71 points. Everyone else around me has like 40. So that's always pretty good.
So you're going to be that guy next
yeah,
time.
I'm hoping so.
We can just rotate amongst us.
So, and being that I own Seven Wonders and all the expansions, I will definitely not make the last table again.
It's not going to go well for you.
No.
If you're lucky, you might get the Dan Simmons prize, which is you come in exactly one place under what you need to go into the finals.
I did that every tournament before that. So I was like always like, oh, let me take the top four. You're number five! Again and again and again. Despite winning, I won Love Letter a couple of games too, but didn't make that title.
Yeah, that one was a tough one though. That seemed like random luck. It's Love Letter.
Yeah.
I know.
What's really bad about that is if you lose a game, it's in your head until the day you die.
Oh, God. All right, guys. We don't have a lot of news, but we wanted to start talking about some new Kickstarter games. As kind of a new segment on the show, which I guess will kind of roll into the news because Kickstarters are timely. They're short. Usually it's 30, 60 days.
Yeah. And if you're getting into board games or if you're a longtime fan, Kickstarter is really the new wave. You're seeing more and more games showing up Kickstarter before they ever show up at a con or at a store.
Yeah, it's kind of nice because generally when you find out about a product, it's usually about like a month or two before the product comes out. And Kickstarter gives you an idea of, okay, this is going to be out in 6 months, and these are going to be like the expansions that are coming out 3 months spaced apart from the release of that. Gives you like a huge window to find out more about.
Yeah, and also when you help kickstart a game, you usually get like unique dice or like these specialty cards that have different art. Like it's all different from whatever you get.
Yeah, they're stretch goals. So for the same price you would get that game in retail, you're getting either better art, more components, upgraded components, bonus features. So it's a pretty nice deal.
But at the same time, you have to really study carefully the different goals because some of those items, if they reach their goals, will be in the game when it releases. Some of those things are just Kickstarter related and won't be in there. So you have to really read through the fine print.
Yeah. That is true.
Yeah, and there's the risk factor. I mean, there's that paragraph at the bottom of every Kickstarter, you know, and not even all games, but literally every Kickstarter. It basically says, you know, you're investing, you're putting your money here at your own risk, you can't guarantee delivery, and sometimes it doesn't work out. So if you're following, I think it was maybe 3-4 months ago, they started to fall apart, but I think the Kickstarter ended last fall, the doom that came to Atlantic City. And this was a Kickstarter. The guy raised, I don't know, like $120,000. It was some ridiculous amount of money. It's a Cthulhu board game, so people came out of the woodwork for it. And it looked good. I mean, it looked like a solid game, but the guy, I don't know if he just didn't have enough business sense or if he didn't know what to do or if he literally just mishandled the money, which it sounds like might have been part of it. But the money was gone, and he kind of popped on there, I think, in June and said, you know, we don't have any money anymore. So,
yeah, and the thing about Kickstarter, if you've never been on the webpage, is it's basically crowdsourced funding. So originally the idea was created to, if you had a project, if you had a something you wanted to create, something you wanted to build, something you wanted to sell as a product, a dance performance, theater, something for the community, people would be able to donate to the project. Kickstarter would take a small portion of that, and it would allow things that would normally not be able to get funded to be funded and provided to the public. So there have been those small projects, but this was obviously a very big one that failed, and mostly because he just literally took the money and ran or moved.
Yeah, that's one thing too. It's the one suggestion I'll give everyone is if you're going to back a project, like I just backed my first project, Magnum Opus, today actually, and by the time you guys hear this, that Kickstarter will be over. It's got about 80 minutes left, but basically it's powered by GameSalute. And all the GameSalute backings have followed through on production on every call. You should definitely look into the developer and the publisher on the project, see if they have any other successful Kickstarters or if they have a series of failed Kickstarters, see what their involvement with the community is. Because if you see a project that looks amazing and you never heard of this person before and there's tens of thousands of backers, it could be a crapshoot. You can't guarantee that you'll see that project.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get lucky. You know, we talked about Boss Monster last week, and that was just two guys, brothers, who put a game together, and they produced it, and it did very well. It was only a little late, I think. Game's great, good reviews. And then you have the Doom that came to Atlantic City, who basically crashed and burned. And, you know, people who wanted to see that game produced were going to get to see it eventually. Cryptozoic picked it up. But I'm not sure what's happening for the backers, if they're getting their money back, or if they're getting copies, or if it's just, hey, the game's going to exist, but, you know, you're out of luck if you helped us get it together.
Yeah, there's been some rumors and some information coming out that Cryptozoic may provide a copy for the backers, but I don't believe it's with all the special stretch goals. So everyone's kind of winning. Unfortunately, the person's probably the biggest winner is the one who just literally stole that game away and took those people's money.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what kind of legal recourse they have, but I don't know. It'll be a mess for a while.
Yeah. I mean, and with Cryptozoic picking that game up, a lot of the games, like, you know, isn't huge hits. Like, people kind of sometimes turned off by the art or whatnot. But after hearing that, I was like, I think I might want to pick up a Cryptozoic game, show some support for the company that, you know, even if they're not top sellers, they're not the Fantasy Flight or, you know, selling their millionth copy of a game, they do care about the community, which is always a nice push from any developer.
Yeah, they're not just about the money. Well, they might be just about money. Who knows how many people want to buy that? You know?
That is true.
So, yeah, definitely check out Kickstarter. Once again, be careful.
Yeah.
Especially for your money, but also for your sanity. Because you will look at a game, and we'll be talking about a game a little bit later that was Kickstarted, where you could pick up the base set, and or you can pick up an expansion. So that seems good. Oh, it's only another $10. And, oh, there'll be another expansion. That'd be another $10. Oh, it comes with this really cool object. Oh, that's great. It's another $10. The next thing you know, you're paying $500 for a Kickstarter game that you've never actually seen in person.
You're wondering why your credit card is maxed at the end of the month, and yet you own nothing physically to show for it.
Yeah. And you just emptied your game budget for 6 months, and you won't see that game for 8 months. So.
And then obviously, unless there's a Kickstarter goal that you really want that's only going to be exclusive to Kickstarter, you might be better off waiting till the game comes to the store or goes online, because otherwise you're paying for something you really don't have to, unless you're really trying to support the creator into getting that game out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I backed one in June, Canterbury, and I think they're shipping in a month. Like, they're loading it on the boats right now, so it's done. The guy's done. But I played it at the store. The creator, Andrew Parks, showed up at the store for our grand opening at Myriad, and he demoed it. So I played it, I liked it, I knew I liked it, and his funding was like, you know, I think he barely made it, maybe a couple $1,000s over the goal. So I felt like I was helping him get the game out there, and I wanted to see it. So that was a special circumstance for me. But that was, you know, 3 months ago, so I'm still waiting to see the game. I know it's coming, but, you know, 2 months ago it could have been a crapshoot.
I backed Coup, which was a small... kind of bluffing game. It was from the creators of Avalon and the Resistance. Really nice artwork, small card game, kind of following on the heels of Love Letter with those kind of micro games. It was only $15, but they raised, I think, over $200,000 for that game, and it was really a lot of fun to be part of how they were just hitting different stretch goals time and time again, and the components were just getting better. So I'm hoping to see that soon. And I actually also backed Small World 2, which originally Days of Wonder came out with a Kickstarter for that, and the way they had structured it was quite bad, and people still were backing it, but Days of Wonder, being the great company they are, decided to pull it down and then relaunch it with better stretch goals. So the game itself was to release Small World 2 for you know, the iPhone and all the other kind of phones and apps. And so everyone who already has a copy of Small World will get the Small World 2 for free. So it's if you haven't picked up Small World for your phone or your pad, it's really good idea to pick it up now, because it's cheaper than if you had to pick up Small World 2 later. But they also were offering new races, new powers, and they also offered a collector's edition, which I ordered, and at a pretty big discount. So I'm looking forward to seeing that too.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about you guys ordering these games is I don't have to shell out the bucks for them. Because I was really, really pushing for you guys to look at that magnum opus a little more. come on. But when I didn't see anyone reaching for their phones, I decided it's my turn.
I make me pay for it. So, yeah. So we're going to try to keep an eye, you know, talk about more Kickstarters, hopefully more than 80 minutes before they finish up, so you can actually back them. And if there's anything out there you guys, you know, are interested in, just pop us an email, too, and, you know, we'll take a look at it, talk about it a little bit, see if, you know, watch the videos for you and tell you what we think.
And now it's time for Acquisition Disorder Corner. What's got our eyes this week, guys?
The Pathfinder card building games is supposed to be coming out. Rise of the Rune Lords, I believe, is the sort title. That should be coming out within about a week or two, and that is something I'm definitely looking forward to. I'm not really familiar with the Pathfinder system, but I know it's close to D&D 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
That's good enough for me. Yeah. I'll figure it out from there.
Yeah, it looks like some kind of a, you know, RPG deck building hybrid. You know, they have the stats on the cards, and somehow it's working. We saw some of the demos at Myriad, because Paul got some in.
Yeah, it looks like a very interesting game. It looks like something you gotta sit down for a little while, though, to learn all the intricacies.
Yeah, but I think we both saw it immediately. We're like, need now.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's the hot new deck builder. I know it sold out at Gen Con very quickly, so the people who are not there or who didn't get it quickly enough are definitely excited about it.
And one other thing that I got my eye on is at Plaid Hat Games, they have the dice for each of the Summoner Wars factions. And Anthony is the one that brought this to my attention.
Sorry.
Yeah. And they're roughly $6.95 or $7.95, I believe, for a set of 5 dice for each faction. Or for about $22, you can get 1 dice of every faction. And that looks like something I might do, just to have that little unique one that stands out when playing that side.
Yeah. If you've played the app on the iPad, it's, you know how that, like, when you roll a 6, the symbol pops up? It's the same thing. Those are the dice you're getting.
Yeah. And what's nice, though, is they have, it's by Chessex. It has, like, that same marble finish and everything. So they do look very nice. It gives a nice variety. Like, the Phoenix Elves, it's, like, all orange and red, and Swamp Orcs are gray and green, so I do like the color schematics a lot for those dice.
And what's the price on those dice?
I think it's either $20.95 or $21.95. It's under $22. I remember being able to justify it
for the one of each.
Yeah, so yeah. That's not too bad.
Yeah. You're paying about $1 a die, which, you know, they're special though.
Yeah, that happens with a lot of games. They re-release better components for games, especially dice. I know I was looking at Kingsburg, and they were $12 a set of dice in the store, $9 online, and basically if I wanted to buy the 5 sets of dice, it was going to cost
almost as much as Kingsburg.
Or actually more than Kingsburg.
Oh, God.
So, you know, it's like, yeah, these dice are great, and it just made the game cost double.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, the companies will get you with that stuff. Or somebody else will just come out with it, like those D&D Deeples.
Yeah. I actually I put away a few bucks on the last paycheck to get those D&D Deeples soon. They look just too good. And we've been playing more and more Lords of Waterdeep with that expansion now.
Yeah.
So like, it's kind of worth the price.
I need them.
Plus, one other thing is one of the components in the Scoundrels at Skullport is the corruption markers are shaped like skulls.
Yeah.
They're not just blue cubes. So it's silly to not have other shaped cubes to go with the game. I mean, it makes those stand out. You feel like you got something wrong.
Yeah. It's thematically, it's just broken now.
Pretty much.
I mean, the game is incomplete.
I'm really ruining the experience for everyone if I don't get the D&D Deeples, is how I feel. And, you know, I like to be a generous host.
I think so, yeah. So, what's another game? So, Castellan, that's the new, and I don't know if I'm saying that right at all, so if I'm not, you know, let me know. But, it's the new Steve Jackson game, and it's been on the counter at Myriad for like a week now.
Yeah, Paul opened it up, thankfully, and if you ever played Dots, where you took the piece of paper and you just made a box of different dots, and then you and your friend went and connected lines until you made boxes, and then whoever closed the box got that section. That's basically what we're looking here. But the components are wonderful. They're really high quality gray walls. And then you have little kind of towers, red or blue towers, to go in between to, you know, call that your section.
Mm-hmm.
Plays pretty quickly, about a half hour to 45 minutes. And definitely looking to pick that up. What's odd about it is the red and blue set, it's only 2 players. But if you pick up the same set in green and yellow, now you have the different color tokens to play up to 4 players.
Yeah, they they realized that more than two people would want to play in. So, but you have to buy two sets. So,
you know. Yeah. Now, the castle that you build with this, is it big enough that you can lay siege to it with the D&D miniatures?
It could fit some D&D deeples on there.
Okay, so that's not too bad.
I'm sensing a video in the near future.
Well, we try to do, one of the fun things we try to do at the Staten Island Board Gamers is, or especially our friend Drew, tries to do mashup of games. So I can see that happening in the future.
Yeah, Castellan Risk.
Castellan
Risk. Everything's Risk.
Risk-a-lon.
Risk-a-lon.
Well, he did have the, what was it, the Ticket to Ride Risk?
Yeah, Risk really? It to Ride.
Yes.
Risk It to Ride?
Yes.
I did not see that.
And our friend Iggy, who loved Ticket to Ride, drew him in with that, and then now Iggy does not want to play Risk ever again.
I'm still working on my Battle Love Galacta Letter. The ultimate hybrid game.
That's fantastic. So next on the list, we have Attack Wing, which we mentioned last week, but it came in between the recordings, so we've seen it. It's been played.
Yeah, Star Trek Attack Wing. So it just showed up to Myriad right after Gen Con, and the base set comes with three ships. So you have, obviously, the Enterprise, and we're looking at the Next Generation Enterprise comes with the set. And then you're looking at a Klingon battlecruiser and a Romulan battlecruiser. So right out of the box, you can play with three players, which is, I think, a little bit better than X-Wing.
Yeah, I dig it. I mean, it makes sense, too, because, I mean, Star Wars, it's hard to... There's two factions. Yeah. That's the theme. Splitting it up in three or four, it's doable. You've seen people do it, but it's not natural.
Yeah.
Star Trek, you immediately have those three, so...
Yeah, and the quality of the miniatures, the detail, at least, is not as high as X-Wing.
Mm.
The paint jobs are a little odd, hit and miss. They also released a number of the expansion ships, so you can have three ships for each side, which is pretty nice. And we'll actually have an unboxing video on our YouTube channel, so you can check that out, where we show the what comes in the base set.
Do you know the publisher on that game?
I think also it would be the is it
Fantasy Flight? I felt like it was a different.
Yeah, I think it's publisher. Somebody else. Could be WizKids, because I know Fantasy Flight. They just go all out with their miniature detail.
Yeah, it's WizKids.
Yeah, I know, because Fantasy Flight, they owned the setup, which you know, I think it was purchased by WizKids, because WizKids produces, at least right now, all the different Star Trek games.
Yeah.
So you're looking at Star Trek Fleet Captains, and now obviously you're looking at Attack Wing.
Yeah. When I looked at the Enterprise miniature, it kind of reminded me of how the HeroClix are painted, where it's good. But when you look really close, you do see, like, a couple of minute details missing or not so spot on.
Yeah, whereas Fantasy Flight really knocks it out of the park with X-Wing. Those look great.
Yeah, I mean, the X-Wing models, you can just not play and just put them on your mantle, and they look amazing.
Now, there's supposed to be some grand tournament ongoing campaign that's supposed to be in the Deep Space Nine universe, ending with winning a Deep Space Nine miniature that's supposed to be about a foot long that could be played in the game. You'll have to check with your local game store to see if they're participating in that. But really a nice prize, really a good way to kind of get things started. I'm glad that WizKids has been putting out Star Trek materials, but it, as Dan says, it hasn't been up to the quality of Fantasy Flight, and that's kind of sad to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same system-ish. Is it the same system?
It's the same system. It's got a couple different perks to it, so... You're able to add a captain, you're able to add a crew. I know you can do some of that with X-Wing, but this is a little more detailed. You're basically fighting battleships instead of, like, small fighters. So it's a much longer battle.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I definitely want to play it either way. I mean, I like X-Wing, and Star Trek.
And once again, another dangerous acquisition disorder you could have by just be like, hey, I got one, now I need everything.
Yeah, once I can have Picard versus the Borg, that's when you can count me in.
The Borg, yeah. They'll have the one ship.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Take up half the table.
And if it doesn't win every game, I'm going to view that game as not being historically accurate.
Yeah.
And incredibly broken.
Hey, Dan, where's your miniatures? Oh, here it is. Boom!
Is it a suitcase?
It is the suitcase. Just a big block box just dropping on the table. The Borg win! You destroyed my miniatures! That's what the Borg do!
What's the attack on that? One higher than your armor, and its defense is two stronger than your best weapon. Well, that sounds fair.
And it's a huge cube.
Yeah. It's thematic. All right. So, Attack Wing. That's one of us, I'm sure, will have it soon. The other game on our acquisition disorder this week is I believe Dan and Kim have this already. Puppet Wars Unstitched.
Yeah.
They've been gluing. Kim's been gluing.
Oh, God. I've been gluing. Oh, only because of my tiny hands. My tiny fingers.
Your tiny glued fingers?
My tiny glued fingers. Because it would be the size smaller than a thumbtack. Some pieces. And just, like, I had to do a sheriff's badge on the waist of some guy, and he was, like, kind of leaned over. So getting that in there, it was just rough.
Yeah, this thing was like if somebody cut a grain of rice in half. I didn't even see it on the sprues. Yeah, because we realized recently, like, we haven't really played any big miniature battle games. Like, War Machine, Warhammer, all these games are really huge now. And we don't have anything like that amongst our group. So we figured Malifaux has a lot of fantasy-based, which follows the theme of a lot of our deck builders and other board games. So we picked it up to see what it would be like. And on the back, it shows these beautiful, detailed miniatures. And you open it up, and there's plastic sheets. Because everything's on sprues, which we never dealt with in the past. So that was a fun learning curve, to put 44 miniatures together.
And they had a map. A map of what to put. And what it was is, they'll show a figure. They don't show you it completely done, which throws us off. Because we'll be gluing it, and it's like, is this what it's supposed to look like? I think so. There's a little bit spacing, but oh well, we'll just prime that. But it shows you how to do it. Not very well, but I guess you just use your imagination, because they're puppets. They're supposed to look like they're just stitched together.
Yeah, for a first-time miniature assembly, it was a little rough for us, but we were able to weather the storm. So if we were able to do it, I imagine anyone can do it.
But yeah. You guys have a video coming soon, right?
Yeah, we're going to have an unboxing and assembly video shortly.
So check out our YouTube page for that as well.
Yes, YouTube. I'll have the address for you soon, because I don't remember what it is. So that was all of our acquisition disorders this week, right? Anything else, guys?
That's pretty much it for me.
Can I just say, I know I didn't put any input for the acquisition disorder, because I've been tied up with Saints Row 4. I've just been playing video games all day, and I just have to note, like, a lot of people who play board games also do play video games. The new Saints Row.
That's not true at all.
They lied to me.
Why would you tell people that?
This podcast is for board games and board games only.
It has games in the title. I assume.
So is it fun?
Oh, it is. It's a blast. It's just, it has a storyline, but it's just insane. You fight aliens and you're in this virtual world. It's pretty cool. And I just love the fact that you can be the voice of Booker DeWitt or Lady Comstock from Bioshock Infinite.
Oh, really?
Yes. They have Laura Bailey, who also plays Lost in Fullmetal Alchemist, which I love her. So, of course, I had to make a female character with her voice. And she somehow turned out to look like Laura Bailey, only with blue hair.
And one of the voice options is Nolan North, and it just notes Nolan North. It's not even like male voice four or anything. They just give him the full credit right out of the gate, which was great.
That's fantastic. I've never played any of those games, but I see Dubstep Gun and I'm like, okay,
yeah,
awesome. need to see this.
They also have a black hole gun.
Nice.
Which just creates black holes, and it's just insane. You can get sucked into it too. Like, you'll see like the graphics getting all wacky, but it's a pretty fun game.
Yeah, it's definitely another one of those games that you can just lose hours, days, yeah, weeks, and be locked away because you just spend your entire life. It's like it's a sandbox game, like GTA, right?
Yes, you have different side quests. You have a main quest, which I just run through the main quest because I don't bother with that side quest stuff.
Yeah, I was playing it so long the other day when I saved, it shows your time played, and I was like, man, we could have done Rune Wars in that time. That's not good.
Ah, Rune Wars. Don't bring it up, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, Rune Wars is another one of those games that we've been playing a lot recently, but unfortunately our current game has been on hold, but it's another game that we're looking to do an in-depth review for soon.
Very soon, yeah. I think we're almost close enough. We almost have all the rules down.
So we can play right.
Yeah, after 2 months, we almost have all the rules down.
But it's a really good game, and yeah, we definitely all play video games, so it's always kind of hard to balance all the time between all the different games.
At the table this week.
All right, so now we're going to talk about the games that hit our table this last week. Some new, some old, some favorites that we brought back out for various reasons. And we'll start off with Neuroshima Hex, which Chris talked about last week, but I got the chance to play over the weekend while we were prepping for Ticket to Ride by not playing it and not studying strategy and not trash-talking with the other players who were studying strategy.
Definitely. It's a fun game, and I was actually able to sit down, Anthony, before the tournament, and we had a new player with us, a new friend to the game store, George. And Paul actually sat in, which is always a lot of fun because he's usually running the store. But we dragged him over, and he really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, the first game I played, I mean, I'll admit, I don't care if I lose generally, but I was like the first, I think, four turns. You count down from 20 health, right?
Yeah.
So you start with 20, and then every time you get hit, your base gets hit, you lose one, and it goes down to zero, you lose. Or just you get to the end of the game when you run out of tiles and see who has the most health left. They win. And I think after three rounds, I was down by 10. So I was like, I'm doing something wrong.
Well, it's a challenging game because the board, you have your board on the board map. There's a big hex and you're just placing little hexes on it. So you're randomly drawing the hexes to place on there. So you might get something good that turn that you can play. You might not get anything really good at that time. So a lot of randomness to that game, and it's really, you know, there's some strategy to it, but it's almost better you just get lucky what you pick up.
A little bit, yeah. And it's, you know, with the four player, it was a really different game. I'm not sure if I like it. Not a different game, but it just felt, you know, the flow is different. It took about twice as long.
Sure.
Yeah,
you definitely could overanalyze, you know, where you're going to position the pieces. Usually it's just target the other person's base with your little hex that has the arrow facing that, but it was good to see the different factions. I like that.
Yeah, that was fun going through them. I just downloaded the app today.
Oh, good.
So the free version, comes with two factions, I think.
It does.
So,
but the AI on there is really random, and most of the time it plays really badly. So your base is just wide open, and they play the hex and throw it on the other side of the board. You're like, why did you do that exactly?
Now, just out of curiosity, how many factions are there, and do they play vastly different, or is there just minute changes between them?
Was there six?
I think there's six. There are expansions. One is the Dancer, and there's a couple of small, tiny expansions. Each race has a different strength to it. So one race, I believe we played, was heavy melee, so it had to be very close to the other hexes. Anthony played a race. You played the red race, right?
Red, yeah, the Moloch.
Yeah.
They were basically entrench themselves and shoot from distance, and you just leave more units on the board. Like, you don't die a lot, but so at some point I think I had like 8 units out on the board after a round, which is pretty rare, and then just was like pinging people from across
the... Yeah, so other than the fact of like some have some more special tokens where they can attack, some have more tokens where they can move pieces, as Anthony said, his was more range, mine was more close, and then the other expansions have different tiles that do special moves.
Is the board as big as, like, Small Worlds is? Because you talk about, like, the hex.
No, it's a very small board. I mean, it does encourage battle. Mm-hmm. So you can't kind of move your pieces kind of off the side and kind of build up there.
Yeah, it has, like, you know, it's a very small hex in the middle. I don't know how many squares it is, maybe 30. But there's two borders outside of that. So it's, like, a red one and then a further black one. And we thought, playing four, that we'd do the full board, but you still do the small one. I don't know what the red border was for.
There was some optional missions and different things scenarios. Scenarios you can do. We didn't get to dive into the complete game, so I got to play one quick two-player game, and Anthony got one two-player, and then we all played a four-player game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually, it turns out there's also a rich history. This game, the characters and the races actually are part of a Polish RPG game. That's very popular.
Nice.
And Neuroshima Hex is actually coming out with their version 3.0. So there will be upgraded components with that as well.
Yeah, it's a fun game. I wasn't sure what I thought at first, but it's, you know, it's a lot like, you know, I have a lot of two-player games because my wife and I play at home a lot. So, like, I think recently probably the game that it reminds me of the most is the Duke. Kind
Definitely.
Of that you're pulling random tiles and you have to figure out what the best way to do with them. And so I don't know that I would buy it necessarily because I have that, but I would definitely play it. So, which actually brings me to the rating system that we're going to try to use, is just so you guys have an idea of what we actually think of the games, even if we sound like we don't like it or do. We're going to try to break it down by own it, play it, dodge it, or burn it. And then at the very top end, if it's a game that we feel you should go buy this exact moment, we'll call it addictive, which there are a couple that fit the bill. So it'll come up. So in this case, I would say play it. I don't know that I would buy it, but I would definitely play it again if it came out.
Yeah, I would play it. I wouldn't buy it just because the artwork isn't for me, and there really isn't enough to the game other than the random tile pull. So it's something nice to play while you're waiting for other games, but I wouldn't personally spend my money on this. How about Kim Dan? Would you guys pick this up?
Hearing about it, it sounds a little bit like Small World, and I've had bad experiences with Small World. So I'm probably going to have to say I'm going to dodge this one.
I'd be interested in playing it. I just got one question. When you play it on the iPad or iPhone, I know when I play Summoner Wars, I always feel that when I roll a 1 when I'm attacking, I'm like, I would never roll a 1 on that die. Do you feel that with the app, like when you get a tile that's bad, you're like, oh, the computer's just sticking it to me? Or when you physically play and you actually pick out that bad tile, do you feel like, well, you know, that was me choosing that bad luck, not like...
I don't know that I've had... I mean, I know what you're talking about with Summoner Wars. You'll get like 4 ones in a row, and you're like, there's no way!
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it happen in the game with dice like 6 times in a row, but in the iPad, I'm like, you're cheating me!
So. You bad random generator, you!
Well, the game, you know, the game for the iOS is... The AI, once in a while, does a couple of really smart moves, but most of the time it's completely drunk and belligerent and just randomly throws tiles down. You do have a card, at least when you play the game, in front of you that shows what tiles you have to pull. Honestly, this game really needs a bag, because you're really keeping, 30 or so odd kind of tiles right next to a little tiny board. So I don't know why they needed to just throw them all over the place, but... you know, something to play, but definitely, I guess we're just generally not a buy for this.
No, but if we went to Myriad tomorrow and, like, what do you want to do, 2-player game, I'd pull it off the shelf.
Yeah, sounds good.
It's fun. All right, so the other game that we played recently that our friend Andrew brought back from Gen Con is Chronicle. And this is the first game that Seiji Kanai created, the guy behind Love Letter, which everybody's playing fanatically right now, at least at our store. So I think all of us kind of experienced this for the first time last week, so I thought it'd be a good time we can go over it. Let's start with Chris.
Yeah, if you've ever seen the Japanese version of Love Letter, the art is extremely similar. It's definitely the same type of artwork. It's a trick-taking game, so if you've ever played Hearts or Spades, this would be very familiar to you. Each card does have a special ability on it, so... Not only are you following the suit or breaking the suit if you don't have the card, that's a little bit of Hearts and Spades talk, but your cards have special abilities. So when you play your card, you're able to play the special ability if you're following a suit. So basically you'll have a special objective that comes out before the game starts, and it'll say whoever has the most green cards at the end of the round wins that round and wins a point of fame. So you will try to hopefully play the highest, you know, green card that you have, or I think the number 3 card makes it now the lowest one wins. But there's a lot of randomness to this game. There are wild cards that are in the box. So you can pull a wild card that changes the game. You can pull a card that's evil, and now you can't collect points. So it's definitely an interesting game. Very colorful, very light, very quick, but very random too.
Yeah, what I like about it is each color has the same 10 cards of that suit, I guess you can say. So even though there's 36 cards in the box, I believe, you'll learn the initial 10 pretty quick after playing a few hands. So you'll start to know and pace out when to play what card. So it has a nice feel for that. And what's good is, say like everyone's playing red and you don't have any red cards, that's a good chance for you to put down a blue card face down, which won't trigger the card's power. So any of the detrimental cards, where if it's, say, the round is the goal to have the least amount of blue cards, gives you a great chance to start burning away those cards and slipping them on your opponents, as opposed to being forced to play bad card after bad card. And the wild cards really do throw some wild surprises in there. Like, one of them just removes every card that was just played from the game. So when you know someone's trying to slam you, you just get rid of all of it. It gets removed from the game. You don't have to worry about it for the rest of the round. It's a pretty fun game. It's, you know, very interesting and does play quick.
What did we play, like, twice?
Yeah, we played about two games. Four rounds.
Because I didn't quite get it the first time. And the second time, I kind of got into it, but I'm not really a big player of, like, hearts and, like, you know, solitaire and all that. I felt it was, like, more of that type of game, like, just had to match cards. To me, it felt a little bit like Uno, where, like, you know, you put down the color and you can't play any other color, but you can if you flip it over. So it was, like, a little confusing, but, yeah, I don't know if I'd play it again. It was a little confusing for me.
Yeah, it's... Excuse me. It's a mix of a lot of things, and I'm not a huge trick-taking fan. I'll play them when they come out, but, you know, I don't get super excited about them. I think the first time I played it, I was not impressed, but, you know, I think it was the same kind of thing. I was kind of figuring out the rules. And the second time, maybe had a little more fun, but also I think we've played with a lot of people.
Sure.
And it sounds like the experience with less people is a little different. Like, you get more interaction. Yeah, there's more rounds.
More access to the cards, like, you have a bigger hand, so you get to pace yourself a little more. Because one of the things is, the round ends when somebody's hand is emptied. So if you have five cards left, those automatically become part of your scoring area.
Mm-hmm.
So in a three-player game, when you have 11, 12 cards, it's a little easier to keep pace of who's ditching which cards when they're lowering their hand. You're playing six players, and everyone only has six cards. Somebody plays something that gets them discard from their hand, another card that reduces from their hand. It's going to be over in two rounds, and you'll never see it coming.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And that's my one major criticism about the game, at least we played with the large group. It went really too quick. You play maybe three cards from your hand, maybe four if you're lucky, and that round is over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a lot, because you play one card, it goes around, someone stops it. You play one card, it goes around, someone stops it. Maybe one more, and then they stop it, and that's it. So you're really not doing a lot other than playing that one card.
Yeah, and it felt like the special abilities kind of dictated how each round would go. Like, rarely did a full round go and the high card of that color won the hand. It was usually, like, someone flipped it with the three, or someone used a special ability like the king, or someone wiped it with the dragon. You know, it's not... Which is fine, because once you learn the strategy, it works great. But, I don't know. I don't know if I quite played it enough yet to give a full opinion. At this point, I would say somewhere between play it and dodge it. Probably want to play it again before, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. If I had to, I'd play it again, but there are a lot of better games out there, especially for that short time, so I'd probably dodge it right now.
You guys keep taking my answer, so I was going to say play it, dodge it, in between, but now I can't because I feel like I'm just...
No, it's a consensus.
It's good.
It's probably not.
I actually wouldn't mind playing again. I do like a bit of like chaos elements in games. So the variety, I had one hand where I had all six wild cards, one game, and you just feel like a king. But one thing I will say that's a bonus of the game is it's a $10 price tag, and it's a very small box, so the worst case scenario, if you end up picking it up and you're not super happy with it, it's not like you dropped $50 in 6 hours to find out this isn't for you. But yeah, I would say definitely give it a try.
Yeah, and it's unique. It's definitely unique if you're looking for a unique trick taker.
That's a Z-Man game, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
All right, guys, what about Dixit? We played this a lot last month because it was our tournament game. And obviously, that's the only time I've ever played it. But
oh, yeah, I saw it. It was a friend, Stevie, got it. And when he brought it out, I just, like, looked at the artwork, and I was like, yeah, I got to play this. Something that looks nice and pretty, like, the artwork just really sold me on it. And it's a good party game, too. It's a really good game that you get, like, six players, six of your friends, and you can even, like... Well, can you tell us how the game works, Chris?
Yeah. Dixit's a really simple game. If you've ever played Apples to Apples, basically what you're doing is one person is a storyteller, and they pick a card from their hand, and it has an illustration on it, and completely the opposite of Summer of Wars. Dixit has some really amazing, beautiful, abstract art that you really want to... Each card, especially the expansion Journey, the art's... You really want to put a little frame, put it in a frame and put it on the wall.
I got a hate, man. I got a hate.
Yeah. Well, look, what is this?
Look, all right, hold on a second. You played once, you won. Don't ever play again, sir. You've had enough.
All I know is, man, I went through all those Dixie cards. I didn't see one Swamp Orb, so I don't know how you say that art is
well,
great.
It's abstract, some of the art, so you have to look for the Swamp Orb.
So you're telling me the bunny at the gate is really a Swamp Orb? Is that...
a little bit. So, yeah, so the storyteller will pick a card from their hand, not show it to anybody, but will say a word, phrase, song, hum, dance, whatever they want to do to give a clue about the card. And then everyone else will take a card in their hand that they feel closely matches that clue. And they'll all mix that into a pile with the storyteller's card. And then when they're face up, everyone will pick and hopefully try to pick the storyteller's card. Now, if the storyteller did a good job, well, let's say if they did too good of a job and everyone picks it, they don't get any points and everyone else gets points. If the storyteller was way too vague and no one picks their card, the storyteller gets no points and everyone else gets points. So what the storyteller wants to do is try to get at least one person to guess their card, and then they will get points, and that person who got it will get points. And it's really simple, and that's pretty much it as far as the gameplay goes.
And it helps when you play with close friends. So when you're giving clues, you kind of know what that person's talking about, you know. Or you can just have something vague as what Chris did. There was a card of a pregnant woman, and he just said Kim. And when the cards were laid out, I think Dan knew it immediately. And then what did you say?
I was like, this is actually Kim in 6 months if we don't go to the drugstore soon.
I think there was tentacles coming out of the bottom of that.
Yeah, which, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm Cthulhu on my father's side.
Ah, okay. Half Cthulhu?
Yeah.
But it's fun because you, and actually I think we posted a picture on that on our Facebook page that
yes.
There was a lot of cards. Any of those cards could have been picked for that. And I think Dixit right now, you have Dixit the original number 2. You have, I believe it's Odyssey, which lets you play up to 12 players, which is great. And then now you have Dixit Journey, which is a completely different artist, and his artwork is really amazing.
Yeah, I only played it the one time.
Don't rub it in.
For the tournament. You had 6 games in. So that's not fair.
I did. So I've won the game a couple times. But I enjoyed it a lot, actually. I think I'm going to pick it up at some point. I think it's a great game. Family over, friends over. It's accessible. It's easy. It's quick. It's fun. Especially because, you know, people you know, you're kind of trying to guess what they're thinking. You could totally be a jerk with the game and be like, what we ate for breakfast this morning. Which, thankfully, nobody did in the tournament, but they could have. But it doesn't come up a lot, I don't think. And, really it's kind of fun to try to get inside someone's head and guess what they're thinking.
I just gotta say, Dixit is not a tournament game. Dixit is a game where you want to have fun, not pressured into winning. Like, it's really good that you won. It's just, it seems
it's,
like
it's
that...
It's okay, Kim, you don't have to say that. It's not okay that you won. One time playing?
I think it's a great tournament game, and if you're having a tournament, you should call me, and I will come to your tournament and play Dixit with you.
I almost feel like it suffers like Pictionary syndrome, where if at the end your friend didn't get it, you would be like, how could you not tell that this is Lost in Space?
Yeah, it does.
You actually had that moment with one of your friends.
Multiple
playing
times. D&D. Multiple times, yeah.
All right, guys. What do you think?
Well, for me, I own this game, and I own all the expansions, so it's not just a buy. It's completely addictive. If you're looking for a game that you can play with the entire family, or if you're looking for a party game that you will kind of, you know, look, you can play again and again, has great replayability because it's just art. And especially the earlier versions of it, it has more abstract art. So people love it, played it everywhere, and it's a good game. But as Kim said, definitely not a tournament game. So this is addictive. Be careful because you're going to want to own all the cards.
Yes, this is definitely an addictive game. And Dan knows that as soon as I played it, I was like, can we play again? And then can we play against that? And then after that, because it's just, it's the artwork just brings it in. And especially the little meeples of rabbits that you have.
Yeah, this is a little bit of an homage to Alice in Wonderland. Like you're following the rabbit, the white rabbit, down the rabbit hole to this abstract kind of beautiful artwork. And the cards are big. We should mention that. They're very large cards. These are not standard playing cards. So you really get a good picture there.
Yeah, so it is addictive. And I would actually like to play it again.
Yeah, I'm going to say definitely buy it. If you have like people over for party games, it's a nice alternative compared to the usuals. It's something different. It's very beautiful. You might want to invest in getting an expansion with it. Because if you play a six-player game, you will see those cards cycle a little more often than you want to. So that'll help break up the, you know, monotony of, oh, look, it's the tunnel again. So it's a good idea. If you're playing more than three or four players, you might want to pick up an expansion with it. But I would say it's a definite buy game.
What helps, though, with the cards is also when you put in a blind card. Remember we did that a couple times?
Yeah, if you're playing smaller tables, if you're only playing three people, when you play a card, you'll know which one is yours. So you have a 50-50 chance of guessing which card is played by the host. So what you do is you'll put blind cards in from the pile. So this way it's a nice little random factor.
Yeah, I would definitely, especially for the abstract factor, you can pick up the first Dixit. But if you're going to pick up anyone, I would say jump right ahead and pick up Dixit Journey. The artwork isn't as abstract, so the gameplay does suffer a little bit, but the artwork is amazing, and it's definitely something... it really challenges your imagination to find something to come up with again and again.
Yeah. I'm going to say buy it. I don't own it yet, but I will eventually. I think it would be fun. And I also think you should put money down on it, because that's the only way to play.
Well, you can buy it with your winnings that you won a myriad. And you beat a lot of people, too. It was 18 players.
It was a big tournament, yeah.
Not like some people who won two games and came in second and didn't get to play the final round because of strange
funny story. Is that you?
That was me. I'm so sorry. I know. But, you know, as we said, we definitely one of the rules for tournaments, if you want to win, don't own the game.
I'm set on Seven Wonders. I'm set.
I don't want to play with you now. You just win too much.
I think I've played it too many times, though. I don't know.
Yeah. It's definitely... It's something that, you know, you can play with little kids to old adults, and everyone's going to kind of take it from the start. Especially, it's funny when someone makes some random clue and you're able to pick it out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, guys, we're going to jump to the next game. That was Dixit. I think it's pretty unanimous there. Good game. We're going to talk about Gloom, which is a very unique sort of card game, kind of counterintuitive. Looks different, plays different, at least at first. I haven't played this in a little bit, so I'm going to let someone else start.
I'll give you guys a quick rundown. Basically, Gloom is it's a card game that's meant to be played in a storytelling aspect, where you have a family of five people, and you want to inflict as many miserable events on them as possible before killing them, because only your dead members are worth points at the end of the game. So you'll have it where they get left at the altar, they suffer some type of sickness, and then you're going to be one by one trying to eliminate your own family. You can play cards against your adversaries and such. Like, there is, like, the gacha cards where you'll steal two cards from them or force them to pass a turn or such like that. The storytelling elements, the first time or two you play the game is kind of fun, where you're like, oh, he was going through the jungle and he got savaged by a bobcat. But then when your next card played is that he drowned in the ocean, you're like, and the cat dragged him off to the beach and... held his head underwater or something. So the downside is the storytelling starts to fade, and after like 30, 45 minutes of playing Gloom, if you're playing a four or five player game, it's like, yeah, he got killed by an axe. And you're just dropping the card on him, not caring anymore. It is an interesting playstyle. It has some nice mechanics, but sometimes it feels like it drags on a little too long, and the fun that you get in the beginning of the game by... like, the halfway point, you're just like, can somebody just end this game? Like, please stop stopping me from killing my people. Just end it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you say that, because the only time I played it, that's kind of how I felt about halfway through the game. And I don't have a problem with role-playing. Some people don't want to do it in games. I like it. I think it's fun. But in this case, it was just like, well, A, it's depressing. I don't like thinking of creative ways to kill your characters. B, like you said, like, the theme gets old. And see, if someone's not paying attention, which is very common when it's not your turn, you know, you're checking your phone or you're talking to somebody, it's in a game store, you feel like you're talking to a wall, and then you stop. Yeah, you're like, yeah, you get hit by an axe, I don't care. And when you get to that point, the game is kind of bland. I don't think there's a lot going on there.
The cards are interesting because they're transparent. So whenever you put something that's like, oh, he gets hit by an axe, you'll see the circles with the negative points. And then say, like, you know, drowned by a bobcat. You put that on, that might take away the minus 20 from the axe and put in a minus 10. So it's whatever the cards on top gets added to the score. The artwork is, like, nice, but the game, yeah, it just kind of just fades out.
Yeah, the each family, I think it is, the each kind of color has its own little family. They have a little bit of a different story, different little bit makeup. And as Kim said, like, the translucent kind of plastic cards. So you have the family members, and you try to kill the family members off, and you want to have the lowest score possible. So you always want to have minuses and not pluses, where other people can play a plus, you know, a helpful card, like...
Yeah,
like
you get married.
Yes.
With plus 20 points. Where...
Yeah. And you curse them. I don't want to be married.
Yeah, so actually I played the, you know, first time playing this game, I won the game pretty quickly. I think I ended the pretty game. So it's okay. It's nice to look at. It's an inventive idea. It's imaginative, but it does, as Anthony was saying, rely a lot on everyone wanting to role play and get into it, and it is a little grim, as they say.
And one thing is, I mean, you know, you talked about how you didn't like the art in Summoner Wars too much, yeah. Which I don't know, man, I can't even think of what any card looked like, but, you know, it's not the worst. But with Gloom, there is no artwork. The cards are transparent, so you get the picture of your main character, and then everything you stab on top of them is just text and text and text. And there's flavor text, but, you know, eventually you start looking at those minuses. Like, you don't care if the story is great. You're like, oh, this is minus 40 points. This is what I need to win.
Sure.
So you stop storytelling and start, like, number crunching.
Yeah.
I love the components. I just wish it was for something better. Like, if somehow they can put, like, that, you know, transparency stacking measure in, like, Rune Wars or Descent or something where, like, you know, your character can evolve in stats on a stacking layer. That would be great, but for this game, it just feels like a great idea put to a bad purpose.
Yeah, those clear cards would be kind of awesome for, like, Game of Thrones, where you have some buffs.
Oh, perfect.
You know, debuffs, and you're trying to keep track of everything, and someone else wants to know what your points are, and you're like, I don't even know. I have to add them all up, and every round you have to add them all up. In this game, it's... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they had a lot of good ideas. The game itself gets dull a little quickly. I mean, the kind of the basic art on the family cards is cool, like Edward Gorey style, looks kind of cool, that gothic Victorian look.
Yeah, but as Dan was saying, like, other than that, which is really interesting to see, you're spending the next 30 minutes just looking at play, and your hand of cards, which give you bonuses which are negative or mess with the other people, which are positive, you're just looking at basically a bunch of clear cards with a little symbol or a little number on it.
I think what made the game a little bit more interesting, even though it's like a little thing, because I'm just all about how it looks, is if the card that you put on top of the family member changes the face. So if he was attacked by somebody, you seem like kind of bruised up or something, or like, you know, if they got married, they'll like just put on like a veil and stuff like that. Like if they had stuff like that, maybe it'd be a little more interesting.
Some type of art, just something to see when you're playing.
Yeah, that would've been great. I would like to see that, Kim.
Yeah, something to spice it up. All right, guys, so what do you think overall?
For me, I mean, when we're at the game store and somebody pulls us out, I'm probably not just thinking dodge, I'm thinking burning this, because I really don't want to see this come out. I think it just ends up being a disappointing game. I know they have multiple expansions, they have a Cthulhu expansion to it too, but I'd rather not see it anywhere near the table so we can play much, much more fun games with better components.
Yeah, I'm gonna say burn it too, even though we own it. Because I just had to get it because of the way it looked. But after playing it, I kind of regret it. I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah, it's one of the few purchases I regret. I would say play it one time so you can be like, yeah, Gloom, I know that game. And then and then just burn it. You know, and since the cards are plastic, you get a nice little melty pile. Maybe you can,
gas yourself. You can become part of the game.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And that would be how all the family members meet their end. Yeah. And they were all melted.
To a ball of wax. Yeah, I don't know if I'd quite burn it, but I'm definitely on the dodge side of things. I played it once. It probably play it again if it came out, but I definitely wouldn't buy it. Probably wouldn't want to play it after that. So, that is Gloom. It's gloomy. all right, guys. So, that's all everything that was at our table this week. Next up, we're going to have a more thorough review of a brand new game that you're probably watching and wondering if it's worth the huge investment on. It's called Crossmaster Arena.
And now for the feature review, Crossmaster Arena.
So Dan and Kim have this game. They purchased it and have opened it and played it, and they're going to tell us all about it.
Right. It's a miniature combat game. Goes from 2 to 4 players, and it has 8 characters in the box. They vary from different styles. Like, you can have some that are more equipped with range. Others are more like up-close punching. They're ones that can summon creatures next to you, and then you can move those as single characters. Each character has 3 stats. You got movement, HP, and AP. AP is action points. That's what you use to attack, or when you're playing the base game, you pick up coins. And those coins, you can buy more special abilities that will either give you plus HP, AP, or it will give you more damage you can do. Basically, what you do is you have this board, and it's like a grid. And you only move adjacent. So like Summoner Wars, you move either backwards or sideways and forwards. You can't move diagonally. You can use diagonally for line of sight, but when you do a range attack, you have to count adjacent. Now, I know sometimes people get confused with adjacent, you know, it's like next to them. So if you're diagonal, it's adjacent, but that's not the case with this. So we did a 2-player game. So with the 2-player game, what you do is you pick 4 characters. You can either draft them, pick them randomly, or if you have any favorites, you guys can compromise and pick, okay, I want this one, and you can have this one, but I want this one. And then you create a timeline. So the first player, who wants to go first, what you do is, with your timeline, you go all in one shot. So all the 4 characters you pick, the first one in the beginning of your timeline goes first. And then the second person goes, and then the third. Same thing with the second character, second player. They also have the timeline, and then they go in turn. Also, when you begin the game, what you do is you roll 2 dice. And it's a tension roll. So if you guys got the same symbol on the dice, you have to give up these GG tokens. What do they call them?
Gallons of glory.
Gallons of glory. Yeah. The gallons of glory. If you lose all your gallons of glory, that's it. The game is done. What are some of the symbols on the dice?
You're using a basic 6-sided dice. You have a magnet that is used to help grapple. Whenever you're adjacent to somebody and they try to run away, your character actually has a chance to just grab them, keeping them put. To counteract that, there is a boot for dodging, where when somebody does successfully grapple you, you have to roll one of those to escape. There is a burst symbol that is used for critical hits, where when you attack, you would roll that, and every time you get a critical symbol, you're doing +1 damage. There's the shield symbol, which you need to block. And then one other dice side is both the boot and the burst symbol to increase your chances of critical. And then there's the wild symbol that allows you to choose any side of the dice as its function for result.
And that's that S shape that almost looks like Superman. Almost. Yeah. So how a turn goes is, the first player that you pick, so we have an example here, Queen of the Tofus. So say Queen of the Tofus go first. She has 4 MP. Now, I forgot to mention this before, I'm sorry. MP is movement. So that's how much you spend to move your character. So she has 4 MP. Now, the good thing about this game, it's not a move and then attack or attack and then move. You can move, attack, and then move again. That way, if you want to get close to a character, an opponent, you can attack them and then move away as a retreat. That way, if their movement is less than yours, they won't be able to hit you. So, you have the movement, and each one has different spells. For Queen of the Tofus, there's a Dantotofu, which is a range attack, and it costs 3 AP. Any AP that is left at the end, say you have like 2 AP left, and there's no spell that costs 2 AP, you lose it immediately. You can't spend it to something else, or add it to your next turn. And what you do is you roll the dice, and like Dan said, if you get a burst symbol, or was it a boot?
The boots to escape grapples.
So it's just the burst.
The burst symbol helps on the attacks.
Yes, and also if you get an S, you can change that into a burst symbol. With the range attacks, they'll tell you it could be either from 1 to 3, 2 to 3, or like 3 to 8. One of the characters that I think is Beast is Bill Tell. He has a range from 3 to 8, and it's called Plague Arrows. But he also has this additional spell that does plus 3 max range. So you can shoot somebody from 11 squares away. But the only thing is, you can't have any trees in the path of line of sight. Bushes you can see, obviously. But if you have trees, crates, or if there's another character, you can't shoot that through that character. Even if it's like a little summoner token. Because like I know some people get confused, well, it's just a little token, of course I can shoot over it. Mm. The token just counts as a character.
Oh, the tokens, you can like those in the crates, you can actually shoot over. You can't stand on the same square, but you can move around. Like, you have to move around them, but you can shoot over them. They're considered, like, small things.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. That was good to know.
So what does the board look like? You know, trees and bushes and stuff. I know it's kind of three-dimensional. What are we looking at?
Yeah.
Size-wise, and then, like, what's popping out of it?
The board is, it's pretty much like a standard-sized game board where it's square-based hexes, like, almost akin to, like, a Heroclix or D&D board. What's nice about it is the board is double-sided right out of the gate. And one side has more dangerous elements, like there's lava flows and everything like that. The other side is more basic. And across the board, you'll see symbols for crates and trees. They do come with like three-dimensional pop-outs that you'll assemble on your own to make the terrain. So it does look great. And the miniatures are, like Kim said, they're chibi style. So the board, when you're looking at it, is very cute. And when Kim was like, I want to get this game, and she set it up, and she wanted to play, I was looking at it, I was like, oh, great, this is going to be adorable. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. And the thing that really wowed me is this game is an intense strategic battle game. It's a lot more than the visuals led on to be.
Mm-hmm.
As Kim mentioned before, the Gallons of Glory, you start the game with 6 when you play a player versus player match. Now, you'll have a team of 4 people. Everyone in the starter set is level 3 to keep it the same. But when you buy expansions, people can be anywhere from level 1 to 6. Every time you beat an opponent's characters, you get that many gallons of glory and points equal to their level. So if somebody plays a beast team of level 6 people, that's their choice. But the problem is one guy dies, that's it. They're out of the game. Because you'll take all 6 points. The other thing that's really interesting is Kim mentioned the timeline. Where you figure you're just choosing 4 people on your team, it doesn't make a difference. You lay them out, you'll just do whatever. You'll be amazed as to where somebody's spot on the timeline can vastly modify your tactics. Take, for example, one of the characters has an option that when they attack, it's only a range of 1 additional square past melee, but you switch spots with the enemy. Having him in the beginning of your timeline lets you run up to an enemy, switch spots, and now everyone on your backline gets a shot in as well. Likewise, having your healer last on the timeline is really useful because you want to position her in a spot where she can heal up people at about 3 squares away. And you're going to be planning this out based not just on the battlefield, but your choice of the timeline.
like your very first game, you can find out that you made a huge mistake because you wrote it off as being such a simple game.
Hmm. So are we building out a team, or is it random?
You have multiple options. You can draft it, you can randomize it, or you can, you know, pick and have pre-assembled. You can like make a level limit as to what your team will be. The other thing that's interesting about this game is, again, like, you know, base looks, it seems very simple, but on the battlefield, there's comma coins. And when you move on these, you spend one action point to pick up these coins. As you're accumulating them, there's demon gates that you can go in and you can buy items to upgrade your character. And they range from a 3-point to a 6-point and then a 12-point item. And the 3-point items might be one attack, you get to do +2 damage. Or you get one extra movement point for the turn. On the 12-point items, you'll get items that stay on your character that give bonus hit point, bonus move, bonus action points. They really beef up your character, and it's for the entire duration of the battle. Or if you get a one-use item, you might get something that heals 10 hit points of damage. Most of the characters have anywhere from 8 to 12. So healing 10 damage is basically like getting your character revitalized from the beginning of the game right on the spot. So there's a huge swing of tide of power in this game, where you'll feel like you're doing well. Your opponent can buy one item, heal up 3 of his guys, or even in one case with Kim, I had an item that gave me 3 action points. My character's attack was only 3 action points. So being able to swing 3 times in the same turn was a tremendous tide turner.
And so what comes in the main box?
In the main box, you get about 8 trees, 8 hedges, multiple crates. So that's a lot of chits and assembly. You get a slew of damage counters, comma coins. There's modifiers that will increase or decrease your movement and your action points. So they give you tokens for all that. 8 of the dice, the board, and 8 of the characters.
That's a lot. And I know this thing launched with way too many expansions already out of the box. How many, like, if you went out and bought everything, what are you looking at?
You're looking at probably about, well, the expansions are 28 a piece, so you're looking at about $82 on that or so, give or take, and then the base game for 80.
I remember seeing this on Kickstarter, and I mean, just the chibis themselves, I mean, we're not looking at game components anymore. These are toys. These are really high quality, good crafted miniatures that you know, you would think you would see in Toys R Us, and it had a really successful Kickstarter, and it was a dangerous Kickstarter because you know, you want to pick up the main game and you get a couple of characters and then they show you all the expansions with all the different characters, and hey, you know what, the terrain upgrades too, and you can get terrain that's the same quality as the miniatures, and
exactly,
that sounds great.
Even the token chips, they have miniatures for the bombs, miniature for the tofus, miniatures for the gobble creatures. Like, that's the thing about this game that really surprised me too. Like, after you mentioned it, I looked on the Kickstarter and I see what they have on the horizon. The only thing that is kind of a hindrance to me, I guess you can say, is that you can only play so many of them at the same time. So just like how Magic players generally find their color or their style and they just look to get cards for that deck.
Sure.
I can see this as a game where if you play with multiple people, you can be like, hey, how about we each just chip in $8, buy that expansion, I get dibs on the Fire Knight, you get the Water Knight, he'll take this character. Things like that. Yeah. Like, you don't need all of them at once.
No, I think you need all of them at once. That can happen to you, yeah. It definitely, it has to feel like you want to have them all at once. I think if you did purchase everything on Kickstarter, it was $500. And that came with all of the upgrades, and it's really high quality. The card artwork is beautiful. The card stock seems a little thin, which is kind of surprising considering how well crafted the miniatures are. But it's beautiful artwork, really cute. Looks definitely fun to play.
One thing I'll also note is one thing that was enjoyable about this is the instruction booklet itself actually has maps for you to play on for tutorials. And I'm going to definitely recommend that people play through those tutorials. When Kim and I played our first full game against each other, I only played two of the tutorials. So I was like, oh, I got this. How hard can it be?
Yeah.
Then you find out things like the symbols on the attacks. If it's red, like if it has a red arrow, it can't be upgraded by certain gear. And if a attack has a red border, you can only use it once per game, not as often as you wish. That based on how terrain works, if you stand on top of crates, you get enhanced vision and view. And the range of your spells with range go up by one, but melee never modifies by these numbers. Mm. Like I said, it's almost kind of like when you look at this game, you can think about it as like my first miniature tactical game, as opposed to cutesy chivets, this is going to be fun and adorable game. And when Kim and I played, I felt bad because I felt like that, you know, that cutthroat moment where one of our guys got a little close, and I did that bait and switch attack where basically, you're going to swap spots with your opponent. And then she just got swarmed. There was nowhere for her to go. And I felt really bad about it until I got those gallons of glory points. And then I didn't feel so bad anymore. Because like, now I'm winning. This is okay.
The game reminds me a little bit. I don't know if you played the video game League of Legends. So
slightly,
it's,
yeah.
It comes from Warcraft 3 had a mod, which was Defense of the Ancients, or Dota, as it's also known. So you have these really interesting, cute characters on this small forest board, and looks really cute, looks really innocent, and you play, and it's highly tactical, and it has that kind of feel to it, too.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like the kind of game that you could definitely, like, accidentally stumble into if it wasn't for the price. Like, oh, this looks cute, and you're like, ooh.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's definitely selling a lot faster than anticipated. The price is $79.99 retail. You'll find it cheaper online. But the expansions are 28 retail. They were selling for 20 online, and all the sites have them back to 28 because they just can't keep them on the shelves. This game is flying quick, so it is definitely gaining a lot of popularity.
That's really unique. I mean, it kind of reminds me, not directly, cause, I mean, I haven't played this one, but like the style kind of accessibility, like Super Dungeon Fighter or Super Dungeon Explorer. That's right.
And but you don't have to glue these pieces together.
No, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, like these are just, you could put these on your shelf when you're not playing it and just have them there.
And the fact that they're fully assembled, painted, they do a lot of reskinning. You'll look at some of the miniatures, like in one expansion pack alone, the Fire Knight and the Water Knight, they're the exact same miniature, just different colors. It's kind of a little dissuading, but I mean, you know, there's some of them have minute differences where it's like, I'm the exact same guy, but I have a different mask or I'm holding a different teddy bear or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see that. It seems like they put so much effort into the game. You know, maybe one or two, you can deal with a Ryu and a Ken, but it seemed like a lot of reskinning for a game at this expense.
This game has Ryu, Ken, Dan, Akuma.
Yeah. So. The different uniforms for each of those guys, yeah. Very good. So, well, I mean, obviously you like it, but how was that first game? You guys play once? Or?
We played one full game.
One full game. So. And the tutorials. How'd you like it?
I liked it a lot. It's definitely a must-own, but it's one of those games where you have to save up to play because you're going to be dropping a lot of money on it.
Minnesota Kosa, who was your favorite character that you got to use so far in the game?
I didn't get to use her. I want to use the pixie, but you picked her because she has healing.
Little Healy?
Any strategy tips for playing the game?
From your one game?
I would definitely say try to choose one person that you know you can get a few rounds of this game in with. Because the first game, somebody will probably get demolished. And they won't fully understand why. So use the same characters and just change your timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And just look into exploring a little more about maybe the first game you didn't really buy any items. Focus on getting those coins and buying those items. Try out a couple of different tactics because it does have that really deep, deep level that you cannot anticipate looking at it.
Yeah. How long is each game?
Our game is like about an hour, I would say, our full game.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. And once you get the hang of it... it can easily be a 45-minute game, and it might become almost like a 2-hour game if you're both incredibly good and chess playing it, where you're strategically moving 4 turns in advance as to where you want to end up for endgame.
All right. So, positive. We like this game.
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds like something I want to play. It just came out a couple weeks ago. You guys just picked it up. You played it once. I saw it on the shelf. It looked great, but...
Yeah, you definitely want to check out Kim's unboxing of this game on our YouTube channel. So check out...
Yeah, if you want to take a look at what's in the box, you know, you heard everything described, but you really have to see it. Like, this is not typical game components. These guys went way above and beyond. You know, I'm still, like, I'm looking here at one of these expansion packs. And these things look just amazing. So it's... You know, I could see people just buying these off the shelf, not realizing they're for a game.
Yeah, like I said,
these are nice toys.
And like I mentioned, the Kickstarter, what was funny was you did see they had to constantly open new levels because people were buying out all the components that quickly.
Wow. So yeah, check out Kim's video. Pick up the game when you can afford it. definitely try out the tutorials and stuff before you dump all the money on it. But this is, if you like those kind of miniature games, it sounds like...
Yeah. Oh, and one other side bonus is they actually have a code on the instruction booklet and on each expansion pack that you buy to have the adventure continue online.
That's right. They have an online game. What was that? Have you played it?
I haven't checked it yet because I don't have the 2 hours that I know that I'll instantly pour into playing online because I figure that'll be the spot where you really start to pick up on strategies.
Yeah, yeah. Quickly. Yeah.
So be careful if you see somebody coming in with a metal case and... battle foam and pulls out their Crossmasters like, I thought this is for kids, and they just throwing cash at the table because now you're in trouble.
They're wearing a hat akin to the Queen of the Tofus.
I don't feel like I could be totally serious saying Queen of the Tofus. I play my Queen of the Tofu.
It's hard to say my tofu attacks you. and things like that. But yeah, like I said, it's, you know, I think maybe the cutesiness is what's going to get a lot more people to try the game.
Mm-hmm.
It could be disparaging if you get destroyed. So if you're playing against somebody and you know what you're doing, you might have to go a little easy on them for their intro game. Oh, and one other thing that is nice for the expansions, too, is a way to pick up some strategies. They give you additional maps that you can play one-player or two-player co-op.
That's pretty cool. Good learning method.
Exactly, and it gives you some difficulty challenges to try to not just beat the board, but try to beat it with these additional objectives. So it's pretty fun for that alone. It's nice to be able to work together instead of just constantly pounding on each other and trying to get victory.
Awesome. All right, there you have it. Crossmaster Arena is brand new. It's out. If you are on Staten Island, stop by your local Myriad and see if they have a copy in. Or to play with Dan and Kim, who will probably gladly show you how to play.
Absolutely.
Alright guys, that is everything we have for this week's podcast. We have now the website set up, boardgamersanonymous.com. We have a Facebook page. I think it's just facebook.com/boardgamersanonymous. We have a Twitter handle, which I think it's... I don't remember.
But it's probably has something to do with
Board Gamers Anonymous. I bet you could search for that, probably. It's empty, so, you know. It'll be posted on every other site. And then the YouTube channel. Again, search for Board Gamers Anonymous on YouTube and check out Kim's unboxing video and other unboxing videos from Myriad Games.
Yeah, we'll also have an unboxing video for, as we said earlier, Star Trek Attack Wing and Cosmic Encounter.
All right. Yeah, so definitely check all that out. If you have questions, if you're listening and should have questions, because we talked about a lot, send me an email, Anthony@BoardGamersAnonymous.com, or you know, hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, wherever you are at the time, and we'll read them, answer them on the podcast because that's easy content. All right, guys. So I'm Anthony.
I'm Chris.
I'm Kim.
And I'm Dan.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Take care.